We continue our journey through the season of Lent, looking at this question of why did Jesus die and what was so radically different by the evening of that first Good Friday that we can in truth say that that is the day that this revolution began. So in this third week, we look at this particular topic of this new goal, this new humanity that the death and the resurrection of Jesus offer to us. We begin in our second reading from this fifth chapter of St. Paul's, the letter to the Romans. And often Paul is accused of being a very dry and pragmatic author, giving us just the bare bones. And yet, in this reading today, we begin to get this real light of joy and hope. It's as if, you know, on these stormy, dark and gloomy days, that moment when the sun finally breaks through and we're able to experience that warmth again. This passage in Romans offers us some of that hope after the terrible darkness that Paul talks about in the first four chapters of Romans. And so here he says this wonderful thing, that this demonstrates how God, his own love for us, the Messiah died for us while we were still sinners. So let's go on a journey by a riverbank during these stormy days. And so you're walking with a friend and it's all a bit slippery and muddy. And unfortunately, your friend strays too close to the riverbank. And because of the mud and because it's all soft, he slips down into the water and begins to be swept away by the fast-flowing current. Now, you're a good friend, and so immediately you pull off your boots, you take off your jacket so that you can dive into the stream to attempt to rescue your friends. And of course, you're a good swimmer, and so it all ends well and you're able to rescue your friend from drowning. And it's a great story that you can talk about later on over appropriate beverages. And then there's another possibility. Instead of walking with a friend, you spot this dreaded enemy, this person who has always been there as the bugbear in your life. They continue to speak badly about you. They continue to stab you in the back. There's all this bad blood that has flowed. And it's that person who slips and falls into the river as you walk along the bank. And of course, there's a decision that you have to make as to whether you're going to take off your boots, throw off your jacket, and dive in to save that dreaded enemy. But because you are a parishioner at St. Paul's, of course, you do just that. You dive into the river and you make the rescue. And it's this scenario that Paul is wanting us to grasp hold of. The friend is in need of salvation. The friend is drowning. Well, the enemy, in this case, is drowning. And so you offer this assistance, even though they've done nothing to deserve it. Even while we were still sinners, God demonstrates this love by saving us in the person of Jesus. We only get to understand the cross and the power of the cross by the fact that there is this need for salvation. There is this, and that God does something about it even when we were alienated, even when we were locked in our idolatry and our sinfulness. Because there's another possibility, is that you're walking along the river with your friend and you decide that you want to just jump into the river, take off your boots, throw off your jacket, and dive into the river as a demonstration of your love. But your friend would be kind of scratching their head going, "What on earth are you doing? I'm safely here on the bank of the river. You don't need to jump into the water to save me." But Jesus is saying, no, there was something that is wrong with humanity. There was this experience of sin. We were drowning there in the river, and something had to happen, and it happened in the person of Jesus. We'll move now to two other people who are walking along. It's the story that we get in the 24th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. Two friends on that first day of the week that we call Easter Sunday. And they're walking along, their faces downcast, downtrodden, because everything that they'd ever hoped for in the person of Jesus seems to have been lost in that moment. They're walking away from Jerusalem because Jerusalem no longer represents any sense of hope for them. And then this third person joins them and begins to walk with them and to ask them these questions. You know, why are you so downtrodden? Why are your faces so downcast? What has happened? And they say, are you the only person in Jerusalem who doesn't know the events that have been unfolding these days here? And this new figure that we later discover is Jesus says, what things? And they begin to say, look, we were hoping that Jesus was going to redeem Israel. Now, we're not quite sure exactly what they meant by that statement. All kinds of different groups were active in Israel at the time. There were all kinds of different factions and ideologies about what it would mean for the Messiah to redeem Israel, what it would mean for the Messiah to truly be the one that was the answer to all of those prophecies in the Old Testament. Some would say, no, it was more just a spiritual cleansing that was necessary. Just get the house, get the worship, get the system of sacrifices, get all that sorted out. Whereas others, like the Zealots, were saying, no, it has to be a military and a political solution. There has to be an army that is raised by the Messiah and that overthrows the rule of the Romans and allows Israel to be established once again as an independent kingdom. So there are all kinds of different ideas. But Jesus at this point could have simply said to these two downtrodden disciples, no, you've got it all wrong. The point of the Messiah was not about any of those things. The point of the Messiah was simply to rescue your souls. It was just a spiritual thing that this was all about. It was about offering you the possibility of escaping from your bodies and flying to be with God in heaven. That's what all this was about. But Jesus doesn't say that. He says this. This is what had to happen. The Messiah had to suffer and then come into his glory. After that, Jesus began with Moses and with all the prophets and explained to them the things about himself throughout the whole Bible. So Jesus is saying that the only way to understand these events is by looking at the whole of the Jewish scriptures, the whole of the Hebrew Bible. And he says something even more extraordinary. He says that the whole story of the Bible, all of those different events, all of the things that are written about in the Torah and the writings of the prophets, the Nevi'im, and the other wisdom literature, the Psalms, and all those other writings, the Ketuvim, all of those writings can only be explained in and through not just the person of Jesus, not just the person of the Messiah, but specifically in his death and resurrection. It's only in that that we're able to understand all of those other scriptures. He says the focal point of all of that is himself, is in his death and resurrection, which is an extraordinary claim for anyone to make, that he is the answer, he is the solution to all of these things. Because he says the hope of Israel was not for rescue from the world, but a rescue planned where this redeemed humanity would once more play the role for which they were designed, for which they were created. He goes back to that original purpose. He goes back to creation. He takes us back to what God originally intended for all humanity, the place where God dwelt on the earth, that he created the world to be a temple. He created the world to be this place where he could dwell, where heaven and earth would come together. But a lot of that had been lost because of sin. A lot of that had been confused because we'd begun to worship other things, other idols, and we placed other things before God. And so there needed to be this rescue plan. And that happened in and through the person of Jesus, both as the true human being, but also as the ultimate embodiment, which is what the word incarnation means. This whole sense that Jesus becomes the very flesh, the very presence of God. A fourth scenario about those two people walking along by the river is that your friend falls and slips into the river, and then you, out of love, want to do something to demonstrate your love for them by rescuing them, but you can't be bothered doing it yourself. And so you say, okay, I'll get someone else. I'll find a contractor. I'll look up the Yellow Pages and find people that specialize in rescue, or I'll call the SES or something to get them to come and rescue your friend on your behalf. That wouldn't have worked. That's not a demonstration of love. The only way that God can demonstrate his love for us is by doing the job himself. He did it himself. He became flesh. He became one of us so that he could do the job, so that he could be that sign and that demonstration of that love for us. And that's the gift that God is offering to us in this moment, in the very person of Jesus. So why did Jesus die? Yes, it's about the forgiveness of sins, but we need to understand forgiveness of sins in the broadest, deepest sense possible. The purpose of forgiving sin is to enable people to become fully functioning, fully image-bearing human beings within God's world, already now, and then more completely in the age to come. So it's that sense of the return and that restoration of why we were created to be in the first place. That whole sense we had that purpose to be the image bearers, to be the worshippers, to be the ones who would represent God into the world and the one who would be able to then offer the worship of creation back to the Creator God. And that all of this is part of this vocation. All of this is part of our original call and our original purpose. The forgiveness of sins is not just this moral category. It's about the restoration and the return so that we can truly become the people that we were created to be. It's not just throwing off of guilt. It's the whole renewal of every part of our history, every part of our purpose, every part of our future. God has this beautiful, cosmic, deep plan. Paul speaks about it here in this first letter, sorry, in the first chapter of his letter to the Ephesians, in verse 10. As a plan, he speaks about all of this, was summed up in this plan for the fullness of time, to unite all things in the Messiah, things in heaven and things on earth. This sense that flows through the whole of the New Testament, this sense that all of this is coming together when heaven and earth are brought into a unity, when heaven and earth begin to be this sense of unity. We have it most especially in this whole sense of why this matters. And it is this whole sense of bringing things together. Why did Jesus die? So that we could be restored, so that we could have that original vocation. We hear it in our baptism. At the end of baptism, there is an anointing that happens, the chrismation of the child or the adult. And that chrismation reminds us of who Jesus is. We call Jesus the Messiah, who is the anointed one. And what does he do? He is a priest, a prophet, and a king. And we, through our baptism, share in that. We also become priests. Priests are people that offer sacrifice to God. Priests are people that worship God. Priests are people that speak that created truth back to God, who take their proper places as worshipers. And so all of us are invited to be priests. All of us are invited to be prophets. A prophet is someone who speaks the truth. A prophet is someone who brings the light of God's knowledge into a particular situation. But we're also called to be shepherds. We're called to be kings. We're called to lead other people. We're called to govern and to be the stewards of God's good creation. And where does that happen? It's not just happening when we go to heaven. It's when we bring heaven and earth together in friendship, in love, in union, in whenever we offer those gifts to others, whenever we take someone else's hand and offer to pray with them. All of those are manifestations of this reality of being brought together, heaven and earth being united. And that's what the significance of the death of Jesus is all about.